The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
The Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game is live, presented by Zen, as we're back from downtown Las Vegas. It is Bar Canada at the D. Big show for you today, as I'm Ben Wilson, in again for Gil Alexander for the next couple of days. Drew Dinsick, our pal from NBC Sports and Bet the Edge podcast, he will join us in 15 minutes talking all things French Open and the NBA Finals. We'll also get Paul Spohr, our pal from Fangraphs, on at 11:30 Eastern. And Kelly Bidlin is here. Who says, Kelly, you need NBA, NHL playoff action every day to have some fun watching sports, or at the very least to get frustrated watching and betting sports, as I was as my Oklahoma baseball regional goes down in flames last night.
It is fun this time of year. It is nice to be able to fill the space with some French Open and some college baseball. Especially, I was saying before the show, love it out here on the West Coast because you get the French Open action through the morning, you know, early afternoon. It's awesome. Late yesterday.
The Alexander Zverev Holger Rune match finished at almost 5 p.m. Pacific last night, which, as somebody who grew up pre-lights and night matches at the French Open, it's just such a bizarre feeling to be sitting there, and I'm watching a Brewers-Phillies game on one TV and a live French Open match on the other. It was just the trippiest thing ever. But we did get there. It was a sweat and a half there. Zverev wins in five sets over Holger Rune to cash out the second leg there of a money line parlay we gave out yesterday. The bigger news, though, out of the French Open, which we'll dive deeper into with Drew Dinsick here in a few minutes, Novak Djokovic. Man, this guy does it again, Kelly. It is amazing how he feeds off of tension. And he passes Roger Federer, most Grand Slam single match wins all time. Ooh. Passes Fed yesterday with a win over Francisco Cerundolo. Back-to-back, 4.5-plus-hour matches for Djokovic. He didn't finish at 3:07 a.m. this time. But he re-aggravates his right knee in the process, which was giving him trouble anyway coming into the French Open. And now he says he's not sure if he'll suit up tomorrow. Quarterfinals against Casper Ruud, who has faced before in this tournament on the clay in the French Open final in years past. And Ruud is about as good as anybody, non-big three over the last 5-6 years on clay. So we wonder now, A, what's the likelihood that Djokovic even plays? And B, if he does, you have to think Ruud will be very, very live in that match. But that was the big story coming out of yesterday. And it was amazing to watch Djokovic. His level has clearly fallen off, yet he still just finds ways against these players with lesser mental fortitude to just grind it out. And it is something, it's a sight to behold. You see the hydroplane yesterday, Kelly, where he ends up on his stomach? It was nuts.
I saw that. I saw, maybe this happens more at French Open and Wimbledon than I've realized, but I know these guys, and especially Djokovic, with some of the bigger egos. Like in the NBA, they'll mouth off right at the umpires and people. I don't know if I've ever seen someone working at the facilities managers get called out like Novak was going off yesterday.
It was truly wild.
I felt like he was yelling at poor Fred back in the tunnel about how crappy the clay was raked. Right,
I was just cracking up. Jim Courier on commentary for their tennis channels, going like, you know, Jim Courier, great tennis player. And he's going audibly asking on the broadcast, like, what is he asking them to do? This makes no sense. Like, what is sweeping the court? Like, it's the French Open. It's center court. Like, it's in pristine shape. Like, what is he talking about?
Well,
it's all just a show.
It wasn't his point, too. Like, it's not like it's changed throughout the match, right? You know, like, it's the same thing from at the beginning. So, that was pretty crazy. But like you said, Djokovic, it is still so impressive to watch. You summed it up well, man. Mental fortitude. Like, these younger guys just don't stand a chance in those moments when he's like that. Ruud -130, Djokovic +105 up at DraftKings right now for that match. Djokovic outs to 6-1 in the futures, in the futures market. Still haven't bet on him, but I'm not betting against him, Ben. I don't care how bad his knee is.
You're still not betting against him.
I'm still not betting against the dude. No.
Ruud goes from 11-1 to 7-1 in the futures market. And you talk about that top half of the draw. Not only is Ruud now favorite against Djokovic, and I would say the one, depending on the book, some books it just needs to go a set for action, but the one worry you would have of, you know, not only are you laying a price against Djokovic, which is the ultimate bottom of his market if you are Casper Ruud and wanting to bet on him, but you know, the odds of this match doesn't finish, Kelly. I mean, who's to say? There's a re-aggravation there. I mean, I'm sure, you know, Djokovic will be taking the good stuff if he is going to try to suit up. But there's also a very real possibility that match doesn't even finish, and you might not even be able to capitalize on that ticket or sort of in match betting, so to speak. So you look at the top half of the draw. You have Root at 7-1. Alexander Zverev is over a $2 favorite tomorrow, who barely got there yesterday. He is pacing Alex de Minaur, and Zverev has played back-to-back five-setters on his own, Kelly. I mean, this is over 8 matches of on-court time. So Ruud from just a pure, and Ruud wins in 4 sets over Taylor Fritz, the American, yesterday. Ruud's had a couple of 4-setters, but none that have gone the distance. So just purely, if you're talking odd standpoint, based on who is the immediate path, quarterfinals against a guy who is less than 100% health, who's been on court for over 9 hours each of the last 2 matches combined, and then your opponent in the semifinals, potentially, if the favorite result holds, is a guy in Alexander Zverev, who has also had back-to-back five-set matches and has clearly struggled with his own form at times as big, big favorites who has had to go the distance in those. Casper, now, this is probably the last chance, I would say, at 7-1 where it makes sense to get a future on him, since you avoid seeing the two favorites, Carlos Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner. Those are two on the bottom half of the draw. Those are also two players who have dealt with their own injury issues and have been less than 100% coming into this tournament. So I would say, if you haven't done so already, this would be the time here for Ruud. Personally, Zverev was my pick this top half of the draw, and with each match, you grow less and less confident. He's found a way to get through him, Kelly, but he just drives you crazy with some of the unforced errors, and which has really, in turn, led him to playing a lot more tennis than he should have had to have played at this point.
Yeah, it's I had great points all around on that, on the top half there, and in the Ruud. The pricing is just interesting when you talk match versus futures book, right? Because you've got Ruud's the favorite in the match, longer on the futures board than Novak. I understand the history is there and the win equity if you want to go there with Novak Djokovic as far as just winning Grand Slams. But, you know, I think that's a great point. You're already getting longer odds in the futures market, and if there is a chance that match doesn't finish and your match bet gets burned,
voided, yeah.
it gets voided. So, yeah, I think maybe if you are looking at that match, at least be sprinkling here in the futures market, if not just disregarding the match bet altogether.
No question. Today we are in the first of the two quarterfinals on the bottom half of the draw. Jannik Sinner is in complete command right now. He was a $4 favorite against Grigor Dimitrov, who finally made his first French Open quarter, a guy who's had so many injuries throughout his career. Sinner is already up a set and a break there, so well on his way. Stefanos Tsitsipas, Carlos Alcaraz. Alcaraz over a $4 favorite. That's set to get underway just after 2 p.m. Eastern time. On the women's side, it was hilarious, Kelly. After the show, our guy J-Rod was tweeting that I was using propaganda yesterday. I love some of the words that were coming out of yesterday. Propaganda, slander.
I like twisting your words.
You do like twisting my words. Yeah. So Iga Swiatek.
Ben blasted Iga Swiatek yesterday on the air.
I basically said she was never going to win another match, is what I said yesterday. She beats Marketa Vondrousova 0-2. So if you're keeping score at home, that is the last two matches Iga has won 4-0, losing a combined 2 games. Not bad. And Coco Gauff rallied today. Ons Jabeur, who suddenly found some form in this tournament. Kelly, Jabeur was just unbettable the better part of 4 months, but has really found something, and she pushed Coco Gauff there really, really hard. Gauff comes from a set down to win that match, so it sets up a Coco Gauff Iga Swiatek semifinals, which will go up later on in the week, and the early pricing on that, just checking my odd screen here for the update there, I'm seeing Swiatek at least offshore about -735. So that gives you an idea. As good as Coco Gauff is, you would be stunned even to see her take a set.
Yeah, -800 to DK.
DK up to -800. Yeah, Swiatek -215 now to win the French. Tomorrow we'll have the other two quarterfinals there. Jasmine Paolini, Elena Rybakina. Rybakina, a big favorite. Mira Andreeva and Aryna Sabalenka over a $4 favorite there. So, yes, Swiatek does, in fact, make me eat my words of her never winning a match ever again, as she wins 0-2 today.
That's right.
That was fun stuff. That's our tennis update. We'll dive into it deeper with Drew Dinsick in a little bit, but I do think we did kind of identify, Kelly, the bet to make here depending on your portfolio, if you still believe that you want to get involved to your futures market, because this is honestly the first French Open men's side in 2 decades where you could make a compelling case for 5 different players winning the tournament. Even at this stage, we're inside the round of 16 now, down to some of the quarterfinal matchups, and that's what we have going on right now. The other thing, too, so there was college baseball last night. The Super Regionals are set. Unfortunately, this is where it gets into, we live in this little, our own sports betting bubbles. It matters a lot to us. Might not matter to as many people as far as total handle, rest of country. So DraftKings has not posted anything. There is, I see one book that has posted Some super regional futures, Kelly, but they are very slow to trickle out, and the books that are posting are not making it very favorable, at least on the straddle that they're taking. So yeah, be patient, I would say, if you're a college baseball bettor. But we can give some initial thoughts because we did wrap up all the regionals last night. There was that. Did you see any of that North Carolina LSU game? That was nuts.
Did watch a little bit of that. I watched a little bit of Oklahoma State Florida because my Oklahoma State ticket went down. That was pretty wild too. What was it? Like three straight games where they had fan interference. Interference basically for home runs in that game or that series. Like, that was nuts.
You see some weird stuff in college baseball. Yeah, I mean, credit to UConn who blitzed through that was a really good region. Oklahoma, Duke, UConn comes out of it as the 3 seed. We had the other one, Evansville,
yep.
The 4 seed, massive upset over East Carolina. So, yeah, I mean, it can tend to be a chalkier sport, but if anything, this last weekend plus yesterday, Kelly, it proved you aren't going to get by just totally betting the favorites every single time, every single year in this with college baseball. You can have upsets galore, and man, did we have some over the weekend here. And now it makes for a super regional where I don't know how attractive the pricing is going to be, because you still have the behemoths who are there, the Tennessees, the Texas A&Ms of the world. They're now just laying ginormous prices against some of these teams that made the dream run, like Tennessee. Evansville is going to be impossible to bet. It just is. You want to lay $7 on Tennessee in a best 2 of 3 series? Go for it.
Yeah, I'm good.
It's hard. Can't do it. Tennessee, the number 1 seed, still in. They will get Evansville, the 1-4 seed who made it out of regionals. We'll talk more college baseball later. On the other side, Drew Dinsick on the French Open, on the NBA Finals. A lot still to come here on the Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Act now and save big for a limited time. Get an annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price. Normally $240 a year. You can now subscribe for just $199, and we'll throw in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets, real-time betting splits, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Don't miss this incredible offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe right now and use promo code ANG to claim your discount and bonus month. This special deal won't last long. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe today and use promo code ANG. Just getting started here on the Tuesday edition of A Numbers Game with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We did discover, Kelly, another book that is offering college baseball super regional prices. So that's good. Now we just have to
comb through. Slowly coming up this morning.
Slowly coming out. We get impatient here, you know.
Give us the odds. It doesn't matter what the sport is. When is stuff going to get posted? Do it now.
And of course, there's one underdog that I really want to bet here for supers, and I'm just like, come on, give me a fair price. Give me a representative price. Not this -175 +135 stuff. But whatever, we'll figure it out. As we wait for the college baseball futures to come out, we go out to our progressive guest line where Drew Dinsick, he's been up for several hours watching French Open tennis, talking some French Open. We'll talk some NBA in a little bit as well with Drew. You see him on NBC Sports Edge and the Deep Dive podcast. Drew joining us right now here. All right, Drew, it's fair to say, right, it's been about 2 decades since you could make a compelling case for 5 different players winning a French Open. I mean, really, since Nadal came onto the scene in the mid-2000s. And yet, one of the guys here at the top, Novak Djokovic, has the re-aggravation of the knee injury yesterday. We're not even sure if he'll go tomorrow against Casper Ruud. A, how likely do you see Djokovic playing? And B, is it a fair market price now to see Ruud adjusted to the favorite in that match betting-wise?
Well, as we stand here today recording, Dimitrov looks likely out, so we're down to 7. And if we were to do a draft of who do you think is the most likely to win, and we went back and forth, Djokovic is probably the last pick right now. And it is because of the injury. And even if he were healthy, like, this is a really tough road for him. He's going to have to go through Ruud and then potentially Alexander Zverev. I mean, if Zverev even beats Dimitrov, Zverev has played a lot of tennis as well. But it's crazy that the only guy here with pedigree the only guy here who has won the French Open before, the defending champion, would be the last choice of those remaining. And it really kind of comes down to the fact that he did not come into this clay season with purpose, with fitness, and kind of, you know, missed his opportunities to put together sustained run on clay in preparation for this event. And because of that, he's been a little bit lacking some of the sharpness that you expect from Grand Slam Novak Djokovic. And what that did, that opened the door for Lorenzo Musetti in the night match on Saturday to take the second and third sets and make that a five setter. That match ended at 3:15 in the morning local time. It is by far the latest finish that we have ever had for a French Open match in history. Back in the day, they didn't used to have a roof or lights on the main court at the French Open. And so, you know, it would get to be 9:30. It was like sunset-ish, and it would, there'd be a curfew. Sunset, guys, pack it up. You know, it's like, this is a break point, a deciding set. What do you mean pack it up? Oh, the sunset, guys. I don't know what to tell you. I wish there was something we could do about this. But now they have lights, and they have kind of leaned into the other direction, which is we will make these guys play till infinity. And while that was amazing for those of us who wanted to watch tennis in, you know, prime time on the West Coast that was taking place in Europe, it was not great for the players. And Djokovic was pretty clearly physically ailing when he came back out for his match against Cerundolo yesterday. And, you know, watching the start of that match, I was pulling my hair out like, Cerundolo, like, dude, you have an injured animal here.
It's a no-show for a set,
Yeah, just no-show ending in the first set and, like, you know, just kind of not really playing with purpose or focus or, you know, it was very, very frustrating to watch. And then he finally started to dial it up in the second set. He takes the third. He had Djokovic absolutely dead to rights in the fourth. He was probably 2 or 3 points away from a win there. If he holds and then, you know, kind of puts Djokovic on defense to stay in the match at the end of the fourth set, it's probably over. Djokovic breaks back. He gets the crowd behind him. The meds kick in or whatever he was taking to try to absolve the knee pain, and the rest is history. He wins in five, but the damage done by spending as much time on court as he has in his last two rounds is not something that you can solve by treatment. It's not something you can solve by recovery. And you know, just, oh, by FYI, if you didn't know, Djokovic's entire team, his nutritionist, his strength and conditioning coach, his tactical coach, all of them have been kind of dispatched this year in 2024. So he, you know, if he found the miracle new team that could get him right for this quarterfinal match, then, you know, maybe we have a match on our hands. The market was extremely unimpressed by what they saw from Djokovic yesterday, and, you know, was a quick bet against in the opening money line against Casper Ruud in the quarterfinal. And then today the news has been sort of swirling that he's had now initial checks on his knee after the match. He's had an MRI today. I doubt that there's any structural damage, but this is all sort of kind of evidence that he, you know, not evidence, but just like the you know, laying the groundwork for a walkover, a withdrawal here, which wouldn't be crazy. Like he, you know, I think if you gave him priorities and you're like, you know, hey, do you want to risk the next 2 months of your, you know, kind of, you know, the twilight of your career here? Do you want to waste those new next 2 months recovering from a more significant knee injury? Or do you want to be right for a Wimbledon crown chance and the Olympics, right? Like, there are two massive events coming up this summer that I think he has priority over winning this championship. And, like, look, if everybody else had crashed and burned and there was like, I just got to beat a couple of every, you know, some journeymen here to get to a title, then that would be one thing. But he's going to have to go through the best defender that we've seen to this point in the tournament in Casper Ruud. He's going to have to go through the best service that we've seen in this tournament in Alexander Zverev. And then he's going to have to play an absolute blue chip player, the likes of Sinner most likely, Alcaraz second most likely, Tsitsipas third most likely, to actually win the title. And that is, that right there is a gauntlet, setting aside what he's already done. So I think expecting a walkover is at least 50-50, if not more.
It was 7-1 in match, yesterday. 7-1.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I looked at it and I said, I looked at it, I watched it, I'm like, nah, I'm good. And he came back and won. But, you know, I think realistically, this title is still very wide open. You know, you I would not give, even though he spent the fewest amount of minutes on court or played the fewest amount of games in this tournament, I do not give Alex Diemenauer a realistic chance to win. But everybody else in that mix right there in the top six is it has a shot. The top five in particular, as you excuse Djokovic, I think are the most interesting. My future prices on Rude, it's not gained as much equity as it ought to have. I think dream setup for me is Rude comes through in a walkover. He gets Diemenauer in a semifinal where Diemenauer is just wildly overmatched. And then the bottom half just turns into an absolute war. Like, I think I bet Tsitsipas to beat Alcaraz outright today. I think Tsitsipas plus six is also a good bet today against Alcaraz. And I for me at least, Tsitsipas versus Sinner would be a very physical, very long match. Hopeful that Tsitsipas could do a little bit of damage on Sinner. Otherwise, Sinner's winning this thing.
Drew Dinsick with us here on a numbers game. Yannick Sinner, we're watching in studio right now. Drew just took the second set, so he's up after 6-2, 6-4 there on Grigor Dimitrov, well on his way. And so it's funny because you say, all right, Sinner 1, Alcaraz 2, Tsitsipas 3, where the odds certainly don't reflect that with Alcaraz, as a popular guy, has been priced through the moon here, plus 125 on the futures board. What have you seen, even though Alcaraz has not been really tested yet, still had some injury concerns coming in, Drew, and how much of that are you leading into being a potential cause for upset today with Tsitsipas?
Yeah, so I've watched every minute of Alcaraz playing in this tournament. I've been wildly unimpressed by his opponents, outside of Jesper Dejong, who did show up and played very, very competitively. And that was kind of the match to key on for me, because the Alcaraz injury is a forearm injury. It's, I think, technically an elbow, but they're being very cautious about what they're calling it, and they're calling it a forearm. It is impacting the way he uses his forearm. His forearm is his most dangerous weapon, and it's not close. He has a whipping foot, just a violent whipping motion with his forearm that generates power and speed and spin in ways that are very difficult to handle, even on clay where you have, a relatively slow surface. We haven't seen that at all in 2024. We saw flashes of it at Indian Wells. I have not seen it once on clay. He has lost matches on clay that he otherwise should have easily won. To me, it's because he has not really had that part of his arsenal. I haven't seen it at this tournament, and he's going to need it to beat Tsitsipas, because Tsitsipas, at least for what has been a very weird clay season, has the best numbers overall in terms of his production. So he's playing the best, I think, overall tennis right now on clay, and I think he's going to get the better of Alcaraz today. But mostly I'm just kind of appalled at that price. The market is basically saying this is 80-20, which is nonsense. Like, this is going to be a very close match. And I mean, if peak Alcaraz from last summer shows up, where he was minus 450-ish, I think, against Tsitsipas in the quarterfinals and handled him comfortably, then I will be blown out of my chair. But it's possible.
Sure. Alcaraz as high as minus 460 there in the market. Drew, we're going to keep you another segment, if that's all right. NBA Finals talk next. We can always talk so much tennis. Great discussion here with a whole lot of carnage going on in Paris. We'll talk NBA Finals with Drew as we keep him on next. We continue right here on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two continues here on A Numbers Game from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D-Big. Thanks to our crew today behind the scenes. Matt, Larry, Sean all helping out here. Kelly Bidlin is here. We will talk to Paul Spohr on Major League Baseball in 15 minutes, where we did get some baseball news that just dropped. And we're getting some more details about the specific betting patterns of Tucapita Marcano. If you weren't aware of this already, the Pittsburgh Pirates infielder was already under investigation. Major League Baseball announces today he is banned for life for betting on baseball. And it's kind of wild. I mean, Kelly, some of the details that come out of this report: placed 387 baseball bets, including 231 on MLB, between October of 2022 and November of last year, over $150,000. 25 of those came on Pirate games while he was on the roster. He never played in any of those games because he was injured. But what is wild is that those bets, all of the 25 bets involving the Pirates, it sounds like these are all parlay bets. They all lost. He hit 4.3% of his MLB-related bets. So, I mean, yeah.
Because you play the game, you're not getting, doesn't translate to you being a great bettor, apparently.
I remember Al Michaels in his book said that, because people would, he was like, I get asked all the time, do I bet on the games I'm calling? And he said, if I, wrote in his book, if I were to have bet on all the inside info I had gotten from talking to coaches and players, I would have gone bankrupt 30 years ago. You know? And so I mean, it's so true. It is so true. So Tucapita, Marcano. There were a few other players here who got one-year bans as well. That's going to go more under the radar. There were three minor leaguers banned for 1 year, and then one big leaguer, A's pitcher Michael Kelly, who was for betting while he was in the minor league. So he gets a year ban on that. But
yeah, lifetime ban, yeah. Really, because he bet on games involving his own team. Right.
Correct.
I mean, that's really where that's coming. I really wish I could sit here and say we're going to stop seeing these types of stories, but
probably not.
We've talked about it a lot. There's, you know, with the legalization and with the sports books connected with these leagues, there's a lot more of these situations that are being discovered by some of the monitoring services and brought up. So I feel like the direct line, as more and more of these stories have come out, it's these guys are betting. Like, it doesn't mean they weren't doing it before. You just have people monitoring this stuff now and actually able to track it. Unfortunately, these stories are going to keep coming out.
No doubt. That's tough for 4.3% too. You're like, don't bet the parlays. Come on.
Yeah, stop betting parlays.
Stop doing that too. Also,
stop betting parlays.
I cannot recommend enough that the book. I think it's called "You Can't Make This Stuff Up" by Al Michaels. Great read, Kelly.
Oh, I'm sure.
Great read.
I'm sure.
It's an awesome book.
Yeah, the insider information. I always love one of Matt Brown's classic lines too, because he worked in the UFC world for so long. It's not like you ever go to a UFC camp before they're warming up for a fight. You never hear a trainer say the guy's having a bad camp.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like the horse races, right? Where it's like, oh, the horse looks great. I never hear the trainer be like, he looked okay today. We don't know what to expect out of the Derby.
Yeah, exactly. The Michaels book, too. He's got some great Howard Cosell stories in there,
okay,
which are just wild. So, yeah, I cannot recommend that enough. Anyway, back to the NBA Finals where we started the discussion on Game 1 last segment. We did not dive yet into the total here, Kelly, as much as I think most people recognize the early spread movement here from Boston minus 5.5 out to 6.5. I thought a little bit more under the radar and interesting was the total movement here, because you have a Dallas team that was number one in the NBA, final 15 games of the regular season in defensive rating, carried that over through the postseason, and Boston, who was top 2-3 in the regular season, the postseason, in all sort of defensive categories, and yet we saw money to the over here, 213.5 at open, 214.5 now. Market-wide, what was your interpretation of the why behind that? Because I'm trying to figure it out, honestly.
I thought this number was pretty spot on. I think you see they didn't draw much interest from me. I mean, you do have two extremely efficient offenses going right now as well. You know, if Porzingis gets back in there, well, Porzingis, though, probably a net zero kind of what he brings offensively and defensively, maybe a little bit more offensive. Not much attraction for me. I think I always get wrapped up with the totals, and this blinds me sometimes, so I just try to avoid it. Sometimes these early games, I think you always look over later games in the series. You're looking under. It's kind of the old prize fighter metaphor, right? You're figuring stuff out early in the series, and some defenses are getting tripped up by what the offenses are throwing at them. Defenses will catch up. Pace will slow down. Later in the series, and with Luka Doncic, his usage rate being as high as it is, it's just the game's always going to move a little bit slower. So early on, Ben, I would probably this number I have no interest in betting in. I think unders later in the series are something I'll be looking
for. Sure, that's a good way to phrase it on that. Again, Celtics minus 6.5, 214.5 is your prevailing side in total across the market. Really no disparities there either with how heavily bet this series is going to be. As far as some of the overall series, the leaders here, whether it's points, rebounds, assists, are Jonathan Von Tobel at VSiN.com, senior NBA analyst. He's got a big write-up on the full series. Some of the prop markets to dive into. Kelly, you have made a bet here on the rebounding markets. We briefly touched on it yesterday, but it's worth revisiting here since these are kind of the markets that, with how heavily bet this stuff is in the NBA Finals, Kelly, I feel like is where you get the most value, honestly, with how the pricing can just be wildly variant across different books.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I was really diving into these on Friday and Saturday, and it just, man, the differences in odds that you were finding, you know, on the series prop markets, and you know, the lead points, lead rebounds, lead assists. There were some wildly different odds from shop to shop. So, I would still, obviously, you got to shop around with everything that you talk about. But these are, I think there is some opportunity in some of these. Jason Tatum, the lead in the series in rebounds, is a bet I made. I made it at minus 105. Again, it was 105 at MGM when I bet it. It's 150 at DraftKings. I think that number is a little bit more appropriately priced. Ben, he's just been the most efficient rebounder and consistent rebounder of everybody in this series. The next... Really, the only other guy I'm worried about is Luka Doncic. I really, as we kind of talked about last segment, I don't think any of these centers or any of the bigs are going to be active enough on the glass, consistent with their minutes, to really factor into this. Tatum and Doncic, with how many minutes they're going to play, how active they are in rebounding, I think it's really just those two that we're mainly talking about. And Tatum is, he's been consistent, averaging over 10 rebounds throughout the playoffs. We really see him active on the glass in these bigger games. From JVT, as you said, great article up at VSiN.com. He's grabbed 24.1% of opponent misses this postseason. That's the highest rate for the Celtics. It's also higher than where Doncic is at 21%. With how active, athletic, the matchups even that he's going to have, I think lends to this a little bit more too, Ben, where there's going to be bigger defenders and some bigger guys on Doncic that could slow him down, picking up some rebounds on that side of the ball. So I really like Tatum here. This is actually my biggest bet heading into the series.
Biggest bet so far. Again, that's minus up to now 150, minus 150 on Jason Tatum at DraftKings. That is one of really the two markets where it is very, very tightly priced across the board. The other one I think is worth diving into is the three-pointers leader, especially just because you've seen Luka Doncic, who's the favorite at even money. I have his struggles. There have been a couple games in this postseason run where he has just not had it at all. He won for eight stretches at times in the postseason. Jason Tatum, it's been talked about so much. His general career postseason three-point struggles through his first 80 career postseason games, I was sitting at a 25% clip or so, and he's third on the odds board at 5-1. That's what makes this market kind of the most random to me of all these, where you have Derek White plus 250 as a sharpshooter for Boston. Usage is going to be the question there, and volume. And then Kyrie Irving sitting at 7-1. Four guys who you could, depending on the combination of usage and effectiveness, you could talk yourself into all four of them, I would say.
I think this one's really fascinating. I made a bet here as well. Again, shop around. I bet on Tatum here, but I found him at 9-1, which is obviously very different than 5-1. So let's go through all the Kyrie. I don't really think he's got much of a case. I don't think he's going to get up the number of shots that will compare to Luka or Tatum, right? With how many threes they'll be getting up volume wise, and he's not going to get the open looks that Derek White is. So Derek White, I'm not going to say is mispriced. The number of threes that he gets up compared to Tatum and Doncic is going to be way lower. But the assumption is Derek White's going to have far more open looks at these threes than the other two. And if he's shooting above 40% like he has during the playoffs, I think you could make an argument for that. I think Dustin Sweetelson was in on him for this market. I think Tatum's live, though. With how many he puts up, and Ben, this is one of those I just can't get out of my mind. Over the past several years, how many big-time Celtics games, big-time Celtics series, when you want Tatum to attack, be a little bit more active, and he just settles for that three ball. I've seen it so many times, and if he's putting up close to 9, 10, 11 attempts a game, like he has been and during some of these big series, I'll roll the dice on that at 9-1. I think there is a chance that he comes through with that. I think if you look... like Kyrie Irving would be a complete toss out for me. Porzingis, where we're kind of unknown with him right now. I think the next guy I'd probably make an argument for is PJ Washington, right? If we kind of saw during the Thunder series, if Luke is kind of able to collapse that defense on the interior a bit, like he could be similar to the same argument for Derek White. He might get a lot of open looks out there. I'm not expecting as many, but that's where I'd probably be going is I'd probably be looking at I think you could look Tatum, that's what I bet, or I think you could go further down the board.
Washington is 25-1 in that market. Still to come, we'll break down the college baseball super regionals, and up next, Major League Baseball with Paul Spohr of FanGraphs, and we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Sound the trumpets. It's horse racing time. So saddle up for action with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when you use promo code VSINHORSE. That's all one word. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Wager on your favorite horses, then watch the races live right in the app. Download the DK Horse app right now. Back at a numbers game, final two segments for us with Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We're about to go out to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in our guy Paul Spohr from Fangraphs. We were just discussing our general beverage strategies, Kelly. And
non-caffeine people. I just don't know how you do it.
Us non-caffeine. I don't drink caffeine. That was the big the breaking news of the last commercial break. On if you have a VSiN Plus subscription and watch our. That's commercial right. break.
You guys are superheroes. You're super. I always remember. I remember. Well, you got hot. You got hot chocolate in there, right?
This is Swiss Miss with some half and half, with a lot of half and half.
Ew.
It's so
I didn't know
good.
There was half and half in the hot chocolate. Okay.
Well, no, you add your own.
Okay.
It's so good. It's so creamy. It's nice. I'm a 10-year-old basically.
I know what Ball would say. That he'd be like 10-hour poker sessions, and he'd be like, "I got to monitor how many cups of hot chocolate I have." Be like, well, yeah. What are you talking about? Okay, is there too many? There is apparently too many.
I'm also my spirit animal on that. I picture Paul Spohr as a guy who's not afraid to just order like the fruitiest drink out to dinner and just own it. That's I don't know, Paul. You can correct me if I'm wrong. That's what I envision you as that sort of guy.
Absolutely accurate. Why not? If it tastes
sweet.
Great, I'm all about it. Especially because I don't really drink alcohol anyway. So if it's just going to taste good. All the better. Yeah, I'm all about that. But I do respect your caffeine-free diet. I drink Red Bull by the gallon. It's terrible, but I love it.
Well, look, Paul does have a whole Twitch audience to acquiesce to. He's always. I mean, I feel like you're up on live streaming at all hours of the day. So you have a good excuse baked in for it. Anyway,
I'm high on the Prime energy drinks.
Prime. Okay.
Yes. That's my new one. I used to be Red Bull guy myself, Paul.
I'm a committed sugar-free Red Buller, but I've heard Prime is pretty tasty.
It's good. Well, I think the problem with a lot of energy drinks are the horrible aftertaste, like a lot of them have, and Prime doesn't have that at
right.
all.
Right. I'm a noted scarred from collegiate experiences on Red Bull guy. That's why, you know.
Yeah,
maybe mixed with some other stuff.
Yeah.
Happy June, by the way, Paul. We've gotten here a couple months now. It is wild here, and just kind of looking at the overall scene of Major League Baseball. As we always get that talk of regression, positive versus negative. Who were kind of like if you just look? Cause I know you do a lot of the fantasy, the DFS individually. Who are kind of your leaders right now, both to the positive and the negative? If we just look at this from a macro perspective, just the first couple names that pop into your head.
Well, I mean, somebody like Ranger Suarez is, kind of pitching like the best pitcher in baseball right now. I don't quite think he's that. I'm never one to just invalidate a player's run as luck. I think that's really easy for some dweeb who plays fantasy baseball to discount an amazing 74-inning run. Like, well, he's just lucky because of his BABIP being so low. Like, he is doing things to influence that BABIP there. I don't think everything is just happening around Ranger Suarez. He's pitching some of his best baseball. We've seen it before. The 106-inning run of 2021 was amazing as well, where he took advantage of a light schedule and pitched some of his best baseball. So he's been great, but 170 ERA, 080 whip, it's just not going to hold at that level. I would say the same for like a healthy Gerrit Cole or Corbin Burns. Most guys aren't going to hold that level. Those are your special seasons, your DeGroms, your Kershaws, your top tier guys can have them. I don't think that Ranger Suarez is going to necessarily have that. I think on the other end, unless it comes out that he's hurt, which at this point I'm starting to think that he is, but unless he comes out as just completely hurt and trying to play through it, there's no world where Corbin Carroll's this bad. Sophomore slump, I get that stuff happens. This is on another level, and I'm going to go to the BABIP again. And I don't just only rely on that, but it's telling with both these players. You know, Ranger Suarez running a really tight BABIP with the way he's been pitching. You keep the bases clean, it's easier to do good work. With Corbin Carroll, he's not able to flex the speed that he does have, even if the power is compromised, because the hits just aren't falling. 237 BABIP, almost 100 points lower than last year's 325. And he's the type of guy who can run something in the mid, in kind of the lower to mid threes there when he's going hot. So unless the shoulder is just completely destroyed and he is playing at like literally 75-80%, you got to think Corbin Carroll is going to be better too. So those are two guys, one on the high end, one on the low end, that jump out as me that have to change their performance as the season goes. One, just natural regression on Suarez, and the other, a return of a star,
yeah,
hopefully.
Two great names. Yeah, Carroll and Arizona, it's just been a struggle in general. It's like you take out Ketel Marte, and you're like, where is the offense coming out here for the
Absolutely.
Diamondbacks? And Suarez, it's funny, too, you bring up the NL Cy Young, just because Suarez is third on that odds board right now at 5-1. Another guy with just sparkling numbers. You know, like with Shota Imanaga, you don't want to dismiss what he's doing because he's a veteran. He's pitched before overseas, comes to Chicago, and has been amazing so far. He's plus 350, your second favorite behind the Philly Zach Wheeler, who was outstanding again last night at plus 225. Imanaga's kind of in that same boat where, like, you watch the Arsenal, right? Like, the stuff's there, and you can see where the success is coming. You can also acknowledge,
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, sub-1 ERA, probably not likely for a full season.
Exactly. I mean, what Imanaga's been doing has been fantastic. He didn't quite get as much fanfare as Yamamoto coming over. And understandably, too, that's nothing against Imanaga, but he's coming over at age 30 as more of a mid-rotation type guy. Yamamoto's coming over to be an ace, so the expectation sets were different. Well, Imanaga's been pitching like an ace, and Yamamoto, since the blow-up in Korea, has been quite fantastic himself. With Imanaga, the biggest question was home runs, and we still haven't quite seen, you know, when Wrigley is at her worst and the wind's blowing out like crazy, how will he survive? He has a 7% homer to fly ball. And again, that's a number that I don't believe is necessarily sustainable, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily been lucky either, because again, that dismisses the player a bit. But I do wonder how well he can hold that, because he hasn't changed his fly ball profile. Imanaga still gives up 48% fly balls, which is a ton.
Yep.
The homers will eventually come, and that'll probably be the biggest regression for him. But I believe in the strikeouts, and I believe in the control. So even Imanaga's regression should be pretty strong. That said, guys like Suarez and Imanaga are not the types I go for in the Cy Young, because I'm trying to find the person that's going to build that summer narrative. If anything, as far as an award season goes, those two are probably peaking too early, because the narratives are a big part of it, whether they should be or not.
And you're buying very, very high on that price, as
exactly.
well as Paul Spohr joins us at Spohr, writer for Fangraphs, joining us here on A Numbers Game. As we transition to the daily card, this also goes into sort of the regression talk. I feel like us fantasy nerds for multiple years now, we just keep banging the Patrick Sandoval drum of, like, the stuff is so good. When is the regression going to turn? Again this year, over 5 ERA, but all the underlying numbers suggest he should be so much better. How about this, Paul? Tonight for the Angels, and I realize the Angels are just awful right now, but Sandoval is a home dog to somebody named Adam Mazur, who's making his major league debut tonight for the Padres, who had a 7.11 ERA in AAA. Yes. If this is not rock bottom for Sandoval with the market value, I don't really know what is.
Yeah, and he's so frustrating, and he kind of reminds you of another lefty who they just sent down in Reed Detmers. You can see no-hit stuff on any given night, and then other nights where a demotion to AAA looks viable. Like, I understand why Detmers was sent out. I think Sandoval's maybe put a few more innings on his ledger to avoid that fate, but it's still so frustrating, because this is a guy I've believed in for years now, but I'm just starting to realize that is the price of the inconsistency of his control, right? Is that he has tantalizing enough stuff to be a quality major leaguer. And in that, I mean, you know, like a fourth, fifth starter who can earn $12 million a year, eating up, you know, 150 innings. That's great. But I don't believe that there's necessarily going to be a turn with Sandoval. I've been projecting it for years, but this is just where his command is. Unless he links with somebody that really helps him up the level of where his command is, I think this is just going to be kind of who he is. That said, that means there's a lot of great starts, and I will be interested in trying to, like, pluck the interesting spots for him. You would think that he'd be a bigger dog against or a bigger favorite against somebody making their major league debut, but that speaks partly on him and partly on the Angels as a whole. I don't mind messing with him, but just go in eyes wide open anytime you go with Sandoval, that a bomb out is very possible.
No question on that. This is Paul Spohr joins us right now. Any plays for you today, Paul? Anything that jumps out here on the card?
No, I haven't taken the full look at the card. I was looking more on the DFS front today, and there are a lot of interesting top pitchers going, depending on which field you're playing. But, like, it's kind of a stud day. I love, you know, I'm somebody who's down to pay for, like, the Tyler Glasnow's of the world. I don't mind paying for that premium pitching. Obviously depends on the kind of contest that you're playing, but you got Glasnow, Burns, Kirby, the aforementioned Imanaga, Max Fried, Luis Gil, Cutter Crawford, Jared Jones, and Jack Flaherty all pitching today. All those guys have been fantastic. So I'm probably paying up for pitching. If you are trying to pivot and get really cute with it, you might look at, like, a Mitch Spence against those Mariners that are striking out like crazy. David Peterson Peterson against a game Nats team. They've been a frisky little bunch, but still not a team that I'm terribly afraid of. So David Peterson, Mitch Spence might be some guys I pivot to if I'm trying to get in cheap on pitching, or even Sandoval. Because he'll give you some upshot, but just know that he can give you a negative five as well.
Yeah, that is always possible in the cards. Ryan Pepiot was the other guy, at least I had targeted for today. Against Miami, too, on the road. Can't get enough of some Pepiot there in the Rays today. Yeah, what an outstanding pitching matchup. Glasnow for the Dodgers, Jared Jones for the Pirates. That'll be a lot of fun. Total there of 7.5 or 8, depending on where you shop. He's Paul Spohr. Follow him at Spohr. I always learn so much whenever we have you on, Paul. So appreciate the time as always, man. Be well.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
We have one more segment to get to, Kelly. College baseball super regionals. Prices are now out for all 8 supers matchups. We'll talk about our early thoughts on those as the market starts to mature and wrap up the show with our best bets right after this.